Welcome to Gippslandscapes, stories of people doing great things to help the Gippsland environment. Brought to you by the West Gippsland Catchment Management Authority. Here is your host, Jared Callanan.
Well, hello there and welcome once again to another edition of Gippslandscapes, the West Gippsland Catchment Management Authority's attempt to find, to say pretty easily, a lot of the good stuff that's happening around our region, with people doing great things and making the environment, and I guess you'd say the world, just a little bit of a better place. Today we're going to head down to Pound Creek, down South Gippsland way, think Inverloch, you're sort of in the neck of the woods. And we're going to talk to a fella who has been, look, this he talks to this in the interview, he's been planting 5,000 trees a year on his property for 25 years. Every year for 25 years, he plants 5,000 trees. It's extraordinary. It's an extraordinary effort. And as well as that, of course, doing lots of things in the local environment with local land care groups and so on and so on. He'll tell the story. His name's Daryl Hook. I chatted to him a week or so ago. And he starts off by just telling us about the property which has received all this fantastic effort.
I'm the leader of the Anderson Inlet Land Care Group, which is a small little group, and it's been going for quite a few years, and we've done a lot of work on Screw Creek and Pound Creek. It's fenced off for miles upstream on Pound Creek, and Screw Creek's a pretty short little creek, ends up in the sea just near at Anderson Inlet, and so does Pound Creek, and we've fenced them off and got the landowners to look after the environment a bit. And our farm here is 320 acres big. And when we came here over 25 years ago, it only had a row or two of cypress trees and no other vegetation other than grass. And now we've got 22 paddocks, and every paddock has trees all the way around it. And the farm is very productive because of the trees. The trees shelter the grass and the cattle from the cold wind, and it gives them shade in the summer. And the cypress trees, we're still putting them in our Kanara heater to keep our house warm because they have grown big. The ones that we left for firewood are now enormous, and it's a bit dangerous for somebody my age to be up in the fork of the tree with a chainsaw. So, but we are still using them for firewood, but it's getting difficult to chop them down. So there's only about a dozen left.
Their days are numbered by the sounds of things.
Yes.
Probably.
We've been planting 5,000 trees a year for 25 years on our farm.
That's extraordinary. I'm going to come back to that, but I just want to really reinforce the setting here, because often one can think of somebody who has been so active on a property as being more of a hobby farmer than a capital F farmer. You're very much the capital F style farmer. Like, this is your job and your income and your life and lifestyle, by the sounds of things. It's not something you're doing in your spare time.
Yes, well, it is. It's, my dad, if he was alive and he knew that we owned 320 acres, he would think we were millionaires. And we might be when we sell it, but yes. And so, and the people here said if we didn't get into putting superphosphate and lime on our farm, we would go broke. But we use compost and compost tea and a bit of chook manure and pig manure in the past, but now we just use compost and compost tea as a fertilizer.
What was the initial motivation? What got you started down this road?
I don't know where. Probably because my parents were interested in little birds and things like that, and so I grew up with a desire to plant back native trees and stuff so that the birds and the animals will have a home. And we got a small grant here at Anderson Inlet to study the birds, and the bird man said that there's lots of birds here now because of what we've done. And so that's a measure of our success. And another measure of our success, which other farmers don't like particularly, is that there are now kangaroos on our farm. And it's really lovely to go down the paddock. And when I take my grandchildren down, I say, if we face starvation, we could eat one of these. Which one would we eat? And he says, well, we won't eat one of the big guys because he might be tough, but we could eat a medium-sized one.
what a lovely thought. Let's talk more about this initiative, though, this whole idea. And we're going to stay just within your farm property at the moment. Then we'll talk about the other stuff that you're doing around Pan Creek and Screw Creek in particular, and with the broader community. But planting 5,000 trees a year for, was it 20 years?
25 years, yeah.
25 years. Yeah. If I go back to 25 years to 1995 or thereabouts.
Yes, and if you have a look at Google Maps, you will see our farm, Google Maps of 320 Pound Creek Road, Inverloch. You will see our farm come up on Google Maps.
I've actually done that.
How we've laid it out and what we've done.
And I have to say, I'm originally from England and used to smaller paddocks, I suppose, when I was a kid growing up. And you see farms are very clearly delineated by trees or hedgerows or whatever it might be, whereas in Australia we have a much more open landscape. It almost has a European feel to it. Obviously the trees aren't European, but it has a European feel to it in terms of those borders that you've effectively created around each paddock and around the farm itself.
Yes, and when we were in England, we did lots of farm stays, and we were talking to lots of farmers, and some of them said they're not allowed to plough their paddocks within so many metres of their hedgerows because the hedgerows are quite valued in England, which is very good. But some of the farmers didn't like the idea very much, but it certainly looked good. And I see what you mean about their hedgerows, but a lot of their hedgerows were box thorn and blackberries and stuff that we don't like in Australia.
No. No, it wouldn't be good to import those. That's probably not the spirit. 1995 probably was at the first. Was that the first wave of what we might call the first wave of land care? Would you say?
Yes, there wasn't a land care group here. I joined the Tarwin Lower Land Care Group, which is not far away from Pound Creek, and then a couple of farmers got the idea that they could fence off some of Screw Creek, and they started a little land care group called Screw Creek Land Care Group. And John Cutress and his dad started that off. And then when they'd finished fencing off a bit of Screw Creek, they sort of thought, they'd better get some more people involved because they just got a grant for them somehow. And then that's how Anderson Inlet started.
So talk to me about the size of these I'll call them shelter belts, but the size of them. So I do remember talking to a farmer several years ago now, and they had planted quite substantial shelter belts, like many metres wide, much more than the typical maybe 5 or 6 metres that one might typically associate with them. And their first response was, I wish I'd planted them wider. So yeah. Talk to me about the dimensions of the trees that you've sort of placed in there, the lines in which you've planted them in.
Yes. My dad would be surprised to see our fences because we use nylon fencing posts, those bendy fencing posts like fishing rods, and they are very easy to shift out. You only have to hammer a big post in up each end and you can pull them out of the ground and shift them. So all our shelter belts have grown. As the trees have got up, we have shifted the fences out. So that's how we get more trees now. We just pull the fences up and shift them out. But we've ordered a contractor to come and hammer in thousands of wooden posts because when we sold our turnout block, the guy who bought it took all the fences down and put his cattle in, and they've eaten all the understory plants, and now even the eucalypts are dying. And so if we are get, and as we're getting older, we are going to make sure that there's lots and lots of big heavy posts hammered in so that they cannot just pull the nylon posts out by hand and roll the fence up and take it away, because we don't have too much confidence in the future of whoever owns this farm. And both Margaret and I are in our 70s, and we won't be able to do this for and much more than another half a dozen years or something. And so our fences all started off, like you said, about some of them were only 6 metres wide, but now the average would be probably 15 or wow. 20 metres wide. You'll see when you look at Google Maps the ones which are wider, and we're going to make them a fair bit wider when this contractor comes.
Wow, that's significant. And again, just talk to me, because I know obviously there are many farmers who are planting shelter belts and doing things really, really fascinating and helpful things to the environment. But I'm sure that you meet people who go, oh, and I've certainly heard people go, oh, that's just wasted land, you know, that sort of thing. So talk to me about the efficacy, the benefit of what you're developing there.
Well, like I said before, shelter belts make protection from the southwesterly winds, which blow strongly here, because the southwesterly winds start down in Antarctica and blow across and miss Tasmania and miss a bit of King Island, and then they blow straight up Anderson Inlet into Pound Creek. So it was a very windy place when we first came here, but now the trees provide a very better environment for people, for our cattle, and for grass and for other trees. When we first came, it was very hard to get trees to survive. But now we can plant trees wherever we like because of the protection of the other trees.
Yeah.
And people will not believe how many cattle you can run. Even though there's close to 20% of our farm treed, we still have just as many cattle as when there were zilch trees.
And you mentioned when you described the property when we first started recording, when you first got there, you know, there was some cypress trees and some cruddy looking grass. It sounds like obviously it's an extraordinarily different environment now.
Yes, much different, yes. And a lot of people who come here say, you know, this is a lovely place to be because we've got a big wetland just near our house with lots of birds and ducks and things on it. And things, yeah. So we're very happy with where we live now.
Let's step away from your property at the moment, or for the moment, I should say. Can we talk more broadly about your involvement in local landcare groups, and I believe also the Bass Coast Landcare Network as a board member of that? How have you seen the community response to whether it be, we call it land care, whether we call it environmental stewardship, whether we call it environmental management, or whatever phrasing we want, but I guess connection to the environment. How have you seen that over the last 20, 25 years, for instance?
Well, land care has, as no other organisation, I don't think, has ever instigated as many trees back in the environment. You know, when you're in Bass Coast, you see lots of trees, lots of gullies fenced off, lots of tree guards and tree shelter belts and stuff. Where if you go into other shires, they don't seem to be as encouraging as the Bass Coast Shire is. Bass Coast Shire gives money and support to land care, where other shires don't give near as much support, I don't think. From what I've
heard. You think you see it as a direct result, or partly a direct result of local government support?
Yes, we get lots of.
Okay.
We get a bit of local government support, and we're very lucky that our staff on the Bass Coast Landcare Network are very successful at applying for grants. And when we first started, landcare groups had to apply for their own grants, and I used to apply for grants for Anderson Inlet. But now I don't, because the Landcare Network, they have grant writing days, and they all sit down together and they all write information and they get grants and they get assistance, and then they divvy it out to landcare groups and plant trees, and there's a works crew and a in a nursery that we run and all that in Bass Coast Network.
Yeah.
So it's a very good organisation. We're very lucky that we've got these vibrant people working for us and stuff like that.
Has that I'll call it professionalisation of the Landcare environment, has that potentially had a negative effect because members of the public, some like me, say, oh, well, I don't need to get involved because look, there's someone paid to do that now, perhaps not fully understanding that it still relies on volunteers and what have you. Is there a downside to what we might call the professionalisation of the Landcare scene?
There might be a small section of people who think like that, but they don't say anything to me about that because they know I've been on the board and all that. But, yes, I can see what you mean about the professionalisation of things. But it's the same with the Catchment Management Authority, your boss, who you work for. I can remember when they charged all the ratepayers $50 and they started up the Catchment Management Authorities.
Well, thank heavens they did.
Yes, no, that's what I think. And that was always a sort of a professional body. And I can remember when the Catchment Management Authority pulled the pussy willows out of a lot of creeks and rivers and planted them out and all that. But now they don't do it as much. They've subcontracted that out.
Yep. Can I go? I just want to drill down a little bit more on I guess, community involvement. And I know what I've read and I've probably reported on, you know, perhaps that where people are at with Landcare from a community point of view. Do you think it's in good health at the moment in terms of community engagement would be the modern phrasing around it? Or do you still think that there's more work to be done to attract more people to being involved, for instance?
Yes, because one of the great assets of Landcare is the support that Landcare and groups of farmers meeting together supported the farmers, because every new farmer that came into the district, I would always go and meet them and say who I was and where I lived and invite them to call, drop in or come in and make an appointment to come and have a cup of tea and then get to know each other and support each other. And that has been one of the success stories of Landcare that has gone sort of unreported, that Landcarers support each other and care for each other. And a lot of my best friends around here are just members of the Landcare group, and we get on very well together. Some of us go out to restaurants for tea every couple of months or a couple of times a year and that, and we have good social relationships, which is an advantage of a local organisation that is going strong, because they support each other, and I feel I can get supported. You know, one of the guys borrowed my Hereford Bulls for a few years, and this year and last year I borrowed his Angus Bulls. and you know, no money changes hands or anything, because we are happy with each other, and and I know his family and he knows my family, and that's really nice that we have a small community.
It's interesting, your point, it's an underreported aspect of that, isn't it? But it's about the creation of community and networks and supports and all sorts of different things.
Yes, and it's just a bit disappointing now that we seem to have reached saturation point in our district. You know, there's nobody bursting to plant trees anymore. Which is a bit of a pity, but it's lovely when I drive out my gate and I look into the neighbours and I say, help plant there. Then I get down to the corner of the road and I said, oh, help him plant them and them and them and them. And everywhere I go, I see farms where I've been out planting trees and that.
Now, do you think that you mentioned the phrase, you know, we perhaps reach bursting point and people aren't trying to do plantings and stuff. Is that because the landscape has been planted enough, or is that because there's no money, or is that because there's a lack of enthusiasm or lack of awareness? What's your reading of that?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I am a bit disappointed that people now think that if they're going to plant trees, it's for the good of the world and not necessarily for the good of them. And they expect the governments to cough up money for them to plant trees, which it's a more benefit for the actual landowner and the people. It's the quality of life and everything that I try and flog to people. I don't think you should be walking around with your hand out.
And also, I mean, what's interesting is what you, well, I mean, you mentioned a lot of interesting things there, but what was particularly poignant for me was that there's a benefit in planting trees, which is not just about, which is a personal benefit. Actually about just the, almost the, I think one of the things you were getting at there was the aesthetic of it, just being be able to drive around a neighborhood and go, oh, as you mentioned, I helped plant those, I helped plant that, don't they look lovely? I remember putting those in the ground. That type of feedback.
Yes, yes. And I think the idea of, you know, when we got a little grant to study birds and I thought, oh, well, we might have a bit of trouble getting farmers to go and count the birds on their farms. But in the end, we had a lineup of farmers saying, oh, you can come and count the birds on my place. And that was good because the birds were a measure of how successful our plantings are. But I don't think it was... Oh, yes, it was reported as that. I remember making a little speech at a Landcare meeting when we had Dallas Wright, the guy who counted the birds and all that. He's a very talented man. And, yeah, I think all the people were feeling a warm sense of satisfaction that they'd done something good for the world. And this year we've got a grant to find out if there's where the goannas are and how they're getting on.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting too, because that'll be another measure of success.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen a goanna here.
Well, maybe they're just very good at hiding. You don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. And that's why we're going to put some cameras up and see if we can find them.
So given what you've been mentioning there about sort of, you know, perhaps there's not the enthusiasm that there was and perhaps not the people individually making plantings a priority, I suppose. How do you feel about the future? You said you've maybe got another half dozen years as an active farmer and a major landholder. How do you feel about the future?
Oh, the future is optimistic. If you don't think about climate change and what that's going to do to our environment and stuff, you would be quite cheerful about the future because the trees will keep growing. I don't think a few degrees change will make the vegetation cease. But it would be good if the government would or the people would all stand up and say, we've got to cut emissions, you know, while we keep going down. And if the climate rises by 2 degrees, I don't think you can stop it then. I think it might, you know, just go berserk. But anyway, no, I'm pretty optimistic about the future.
Where does that come from?
I think you have to be optimistic. If you put all your life savings and something into a farm, you have to be an optimistic person, because otherwise you would say, I'll play it safe and I'll put it in term deposit or something. I tell people this, that we've made a lot of money out of trees too, because to get this farm, we've had other smaller farms. We started off with a 75-acre block near Merbau North, and we bought it for $15,000 and we sold it for $24,000. So we got a profit on that. And we bought a soldier settlement farm for $56,000 with our $24,000 deposit. And we sold that for $254,000. And we bought this bit of land down here. And it's increased in its value because of the trees too. And also we're lucky that just near Inverloch here, it's a valuable piece of land, not by how much you can make from it, but because of a convenience thing that we're close to all the restaurants and the beach and all those facilities that the people want now.
Daryl, well, I want to wrap it there, but look, thank you very much for making some time to have a chat with me in these interesting times. I might let you go and you can enjoy the rest of the lovely autumn day that we have with us today. Go down, maybe look at some trees and feel your soul feel.
Thank you, Jared. If you're over this way, don't forget to ring me up and call in.
I think I will do that. You know, it does sound quite delightful the way, and there's nothing nicer than seeing a property that has been loved and cared for. So I think we've got some friends over that way. I might bring my wife over, and we might call in for a couple one day.
That would be very enjoyable, Jared. We will look forward to it.
That's Daryl Hook from Pan Creek down in South Gippsland. Delight to chat to him. Lovely to chat to him. Hope you enjoyed the interview too. Lots of people doing great things around the region. We can get a bit really hung up on all the negative news that's around. Of course we can. But so much good stuff taking place. And you'll find a lot of them on these little podcasts. So if you're just tuning in for the first time today, go through the back catalogue and see what you can find. Talking of the back catalogue, thank you so much, because we've reached our first 100 download episode, our episode on regenerative agriculture, which was episode 4, and just modelled along quite nicely for a number of weeks. In the last 3 or 4 weeks, has just gone boom. And it's gone from about 40 downloads to well over 100 now. So thank you so much for those of you who have shared it with friends and commented on it and whatever else, and just got it into the world, into people's earbuds. It's fantastic. That is it for me today. I hope you've enjoyed the pod, as ever. If you want to leave some comments, then come send us an email, communications@wgcma.vic.gov.au. If you're listening through at iTunes, then perhaps just leave a little review for us on the platform there. It helps other people find the podcast. And look, I just look forward to chatting to you next time we're around. Don't forget the back catalogue. Go and have a look through there and hear some great stories too. And chat to you in a couple of weeks. All right, stay safe. Cheers.